Everybody has a topic on the exam that they really just don't like. Whether it's hand therapy or psych or neuro, peds, whatever it is, everybody's got a kryptonite. Well, I've got your secret weapon. If you're enjoying the podcast, I've been putting out video courses called 450 Formula. They're designed to make these giant, complex, difficult topics as simple and easy as possible, just like the podcast. You get all the big ideas, the foundational information, and you walk away with simple, easy mnemonics that make remembering everything a breeze. So if you're looking for a little extra help on those big bad topics, or you just want to knock them all out together, then head over to 450formula.com and take a look. There's some free videos where you can get a good feel for how it works. Check it out and get your 450. Hang in there. You guys lucked out this episode. You won't have to listen to just me droning on and on. It's going to be a conversation between me and Kim from TMPOT. Kim's been a tutor for the exam for years and is just a treasure. She is so knowledgeable and personable. She's just the best. Kim and I teamed up to do the 450 formula thing. So we're going to be talking about one of these big ideas that comes in really handy for the exam that we discuss in the courses. So stay tuned. I think it'll be great. And we'll see you in there. Hey, Kim.
What's up? Hi, Miles.
It's been a minute. Well, it's been a minute for this podcast in general. There hasn't been a new episode published in ages, but here we are.
Here we are with one of the best topics, or at least one of the topics I find to be one of the best to talk about for the exam.
Yeah. So this is like a big idea, like a concept that's applicable to a bunch of things we might encounter on the exam, like different questions. And in case anybody doesn't know, so me and Kim have been working on a bunch of these like videos, these video courses that we've been calling 450 Formula. You can see it at 450formula.com. But this is something that's straight out of like the neuro and the peds course, because it's sort of this big idea that's applicable to a bunch of stuff that we see going on. So, But let's get into it. So what are we talking about today, Kim?
So we are going to be talking about abnormal tone, and it's most commonly referenced as hypertonicity, hypotonicity, or maybe spasticity or flaccidity. There's so many different names, but we're going to talk about what it looks like when you have one of the two, hypertonicity or hypotonicity, and then we're going to talk about some of the inhibition and facilitation techniques that you can use to help these clients.
Totally. Okay. So the big thing that was like turned the key for me, like flipped on the light bulb, is that we're talking, like, we think about it's tone problems, right? But the big thing that helped me realize is that it's not just tone problems. It's not like we see a tone problem and then we have one list of things to do. It's like, you have to really be aware if we're talking about too little tone or too much, right? Because it's not like tone is just bad. It's that there's an ideal amount of tone that someone who doesn't have these problems, like, you know, most of us, we have sort of this middle ground of tone where we're functional. And then if you have too little, that's a problem. And if you have too much, that's a problem. So we need to sort of do different things if our client is hypotonic or hypertonic, because if we do the opposite, then we're just making the problem worse.
Right. So I think it's really good to think of it like you always put, like, on these spectrums, on these charts.
Yeah.
Where you can be on one end or the other end. So you do have a handout, right, that students can look at.
Totally. Yeah. So I'll email it out to the people who are already subscribed, or if they haven't, then go to otexamprepper.com/study guides. And then you can get all this one and the study guide for all the other episodes emailed to you for free. But yeah, the idea, that'll basically look like there'll be like a spectrum, and like in the middle is functional, and then let's say on the left side is hypotonic and on the right side is hypertonic, and then the idea is we're trying to push them towards that functional middle spot. So the question is, like, what does that look like? How do we recognize that a question is talking about this or that? And then what do we do if we're hypotonic, and what do we do if we're hypertonic?
You ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
So there's not many things that I like about this exam, but I do like the fact that if the question is testing you on someone with one of these tone issues, they're always going to say it. They're going to say hypertonicity, hypotonicity, spastic cerebral palsy, flaccid upper extremity performance, they're going to tell you specifically, right? So let's start with spasticity. So spasticity or tightness or hypertonicity all mean the same thing. So spasticity, hypertonicity, which means increased tone or hypertone, all mean the same thing. And pretty much what it looks like when a client presents with spasticity is they have limited range of motion or decreased movement. They're stiff, pretty much. Like, it's really hard to move that joint. So that is literally what spasticity or hypertonicity means. And then the opposite of spasticity is flaccidity, or hypotonicity, which means low tone. And those kids or clients are going to look very, very floppy. They're going to have weakness if they don't have enough muscle tone. So you're either looking at somebody who is too tight and they can't move, or you're looking at someone who is so loose and floppy that they have like these hypermobile joints and these really weak joints.
Yeah, that was the weakness thing for me was the big one that stuck out. So I'm more familiar thinking about this in terms of like in the neuro, like the neuro side of things with adults, but with pediatrics, which it's also like a neuro thing, but it's with kids. So it's still under the pediatrics umbrella. So the big thing that stuck out to me that I think I would have gotten tripped up about that you pointed out is that with hypotonicity, even if it just says weakness or like poor postural control or something like that they're still talking about this hypotonicity thing. So there's more than just like there's several things, especially for peds, that if you're not aware that that's what they're talking about, you could put it somewhere else and not realize that this is applicable.
Right. So like hypotonicity, you may see it in the hands, right? And it just means that the hands are so weak and they lack stability. Or you may see hypotonicity of the trunk or the core. So this client is going to be really weak in their core and have difficulty maintaining upright position. You may even see a client or a child presents with hypotonicity of the oral structures. And it just means that they have like this open mouth, weak, you know, posture, and they're going to have a really hard time chewing their food and manipulating things because the tongue, the cheeks, and the lips are just going to be weak. So yeah, every time I hear hypotonicity, I correlate that with weakness.
Yeah. So I think let's talk about the kinds of things that we do in general and how we think about it, how we remember it, and then we can come back and then show how we could apply that to, you know, a hand or like a trunk or an oral motor kind of thing, because they'll all sort of have the same characteristics once we know what those are. So let's start with hypotonicity. So again, this like weakness, flaccidity, just like, you know, even if they say poor posture, they're still kind of usually talking about that sort of thing. The idea is that the muscles aren't doing their job. They're kind of slacking off, they're relaxing. So the big, the big like mnemonic, the big idea we use to sort of remember, like characterize the kinds of interventions we do is we think of the muscles as like sort of slacking on the job, like asleep and we're trying to wake them up, or they're awake and we're trying to put them to sleep, right? So in the case of this hypotonicity, flaccidity, weakness, that sort of thing, the muscles are like asleep and we're trying to wake them up. So Yeah, go ahead.
They're like chilling. Like these muscles are chilling. They're relaxed. They're non-responsive. They're flat. Like they're not doing anything, right? So I like that because it's like we really have to do something exaggerated to get this muscle to activate or contract or wake it up.
Totally. So some examples that I know are out there. So it would be like light touch. So this one is interesting because like the thing that always comes to mind for me would be like a feather, right? Like if your friend is asleep and you're trying to wake them up in sort of a funny way, like you would maybe take a feather and like stroke it on their face and then they're like, and they like slap themselves or something. But that light touch or like a bug crawling on you, like a bug crawling across your neck. It's like, that's very alerting, right? It's like, oh wow. Your body realizes that like, oh, I need to react to this. This could be something bad or like it wakes you up. So light touch is very much like that alerting, awaking kind of thing.
Yeah, awaking. That would definitely wake me up if I thought a spider was crawling on me.
Yeah, so there's light touch, then there's tapping, right? And we see this a lot with especially neuro stuff. We might be like tapping on the tendon or the muscle body to try to like elicit this contraction response. But same thing with someone's asleep, you might tap them on the shoulder or like tap them on the chest, trying to wake them up, get their attention.
Yeah, and then if it's like quick, right? Quick tapping, they're going to think it's an emergency and they're really going to like jump up. So that quick tapping is another intervention technique you can look for.
Yeah. So we've got light touch, tapping. Another one is, so this is sort of in the same kind of category, but like quick variable movement would be the thing I think of is like being on a roller coaster, right? It's like no one's asleep while they're on a roller coaster, but like lots of movement back and forth. And especially if it's not repeated, right? If it's like kind of jerking every which way, like sort of this random movement and it's quick and all over the place, that's also going to wake up. So that would be, you know, if we're talking about like a muscle group, right? So like if I'm trying to, you know, elicit contraction and more tone from the biceps, then we might sort of be moving those and kind of like going back and forth and trying to get those muscles to kind of get going a little bit.
Yeah, and that's kind of like that vestibular, right? Fast vestibular input. So if you put a child on a swing and you move them very, very quick, right, in all different directions, like you said, variable, jerky movements, that's really going to activate, you know, their central nervous system and make those muscles kind of tighten up, one, to maintain balance so they don't fall, you know, but that's the point.
Right. And then I think there's one more that's on our little list here, but it's like this combination of just general sort of atmospheric stuff. So this is, to me, I think this is sort of secondary to the stuff we've already talked about. Like if I'm trying to elicit tone, I'm doing some of those things we just mentioned. This is like, yes, this is also in that category, but maybe like not my first choice of stuff to do. But it says like upbeat music, cool temperatures, bright lights. But so that still fits into the mnemonic really well of like trying to wake someone up, right? Like, you know, you throw a bucket of water on them and it's ice water and like, they're going to wake up, or you know, you play loud music or you turn the lights on, like all that stuff fits into the mnemonic. But again, it's like, if I'm trying to elicit tone, like, do I like turn the lights on or do I do some sort of like hands-on approach, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, can you imagine working in a facility and documenting that, oh, I turned on some bright lights to facilitate increased tone?
Yeah.
And my client insurance is going to be like, what?
True.
But yeah, so I don't know how common these answers are, you know, on the exam or even in everyday practice, but I think it's important to just understand like moving, unexpected, unpredictable, loud, bright, right? Upbeat is going to really help wake somebody up, wake up the muscles.
Totally. And then the very last one, which is sort of like has an asterisk next to it that we'll just mention, and then maybe we'll talk about it once we've talked about the other stuff too, is weight bearing. So someone who has low tone, if you have them bear weight through, again, I'm just picturing like an upper extremity or something, but if their left upper extremity is flaccid or weak, if you have them bear weight through it, it's going to sort of cause that tone to kick in and help them sort of bear that weight a little bit.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Because, so, yeah, when you're thinking about weight bearing, the muscle must actively work to maintain that position. And again, we're trying to facilitate muscle, get those muscles to work and facilitate the muscle activating. So weight bearing is just one of those, like you said, we'll get back to it, but it requires the muscle to do something.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So let's talk about the other side of the equation here. So now we just talked about hypotonicity, again, thinking like the muscles are asleep. We've been trying to wake them up, fast movement, this crazy stuff, light touch, anything that would sort of wake up your friend while you're trying to prank them while they're asleep, that sort of stuff. Now we're on to hypertonicity. So there's too much tone. These muscles are a little over, they're doing too much and we're trying to chill them out. We're trying to calm them down, put them to sleep, get them to relax a little bit.
Right. So these are those really like stiff clients, right? They're stiff. They can barely move or extend their extremities because there's so much stiffness and limited range of motion. So yeah, we got to make sure that we're not doing anything to facilitate or increase that muscle tone, and kind of get them to relax. So yeah, I always think, like, if I'm trying to relax and I'm trying to chill, I need things to be very slow, right? Very calm, dim lights. Like, that's what I'm looking for to calm me down.
Definitely. Yeah. So just, so again, sort of contrasting them with the other stuff we had. So before, we were trying to wake someone up, we used light touch. So now we might use, you know, not that, we might do like, it says slow stroking or even like a rocking situation. So if you're going to be doing, instead of light touch, right, which is alerting, we might be doing some deep touch, right? Proprioceptive kind of stuff that's more calming. And then rocking is sort of the opposite of that, like fast variable movement. This is like slow predictable movement. So the biggest one here, I think, is like rocking a baby to sleep, right? It's like, it's not like any kind of movement, it's bad, but this sort of slow predictable movement is actually very calming. So if we're thinking about, again, I'm just defaulting to an upper extremity that has this high tone, instead of trying to jerk the arm back and forth, if we're maybe applying a little bit of pressure on those muscles and then slowly rocking it back and forth, we can hopefully get some of that tone to chill out and get those muscles to move a little bit more smoothly.
Yeah. I think about like wrapping, swaddling, or even sometimes we don't have on a list, but like casting, right? Because if that client is so tight where they have that limited range of motion, they talk about how casting not only will stretch that joint, right, and put it on stretch, but it also provides this warmth sensation from being wrapped up that can really help calm that muscle down as well.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. So we got wrapping, swaddling. So here's one that I think you should talk about, Kim, because this is, I think, a little bit more, it's relevant for the geriatric population, like neuro stuff, but I think it's maybe a little bit more for peds. So there's like rotational movement.
So a lot of times when you're thinking about tone, especially increased tone, you're trying to break up that tone, right? So you want to kind of rotate, a lot of times rotate at the trunk. You can rotate different joints. And again, it's just trying to break up that usually extensor tone that your client is going to see. So trunk and hip, they're probably the most popular or the most evidence-based. But yeah, it's all about just trying to move that joint and get it out of that stiff pattern.
Totally. Yeah. So I think it still follows the same pattern we've been talking about, like that slow, predictable, you know, maybe deep touch involved kind of movement and guidance through these movements. But especially with like the trunk, if we're having some sort of postural, you know, rigidity, something like that, then that sort of trunk rotation, pelvic rotation would be really good. Let's see if there's any others. So the only other one here, so there's again, sort of like this secondary consideration, right? Like warm temperatures, calm music, soft noises, dim lights. So again, like I'm having trouble picturing a time where that's the first thing we jump to, but it's listed in the textbook. So, you know, there's always a possibility, some crazy question writer out there, but I can see what they're talking about. Like, if their neurology is kind of ramped up, which is why we're getting all this tone. And so just helping them like calm down in whatever way will sort of just cue us up to get their muscles to be able to relax a little bit more. So I could see a question about something like that, but I think those like the hands-on stuff is maybe definitely the first place we go with this stuff.
Right. I don't know if we mentioned what those techniques are called. So when we have hypertonicity and spasticity, it's inhibition, right? So you may see a question say, what are the inhibitory techniques that you would use? So you know you're trying to inhibit or stop the increased tone. And then another question may say, what are the facilitatory techniques or facilitation techniques? And that's when you're trying to increase tone.
Totally. Yeah, we skip that. So when we're inhibiting tone, that's where we're trying to get that tone to chill out, relax. When we're facilitating tone, that's where we're trying to wake those muscles up and get more of it. Exactly. And then the last thing under inhibition, which is what we've been talking about, which also has this little asterisk against it, is weight bearing, right? So that's the last one we talked about with the other one. So weight bearing is the only intervention that sort of is on both lists. So weight bearing is nice. So we talked about if you're a low tone, you weight bear and then that tone kicks in a little bit. If you're real tight and you weight bear, that tone will chill out a little bit. So weight bearing is a really good tone technique just because it's the catch-all. So it works for both sides. It really just regulates tone rather than strictly increasing or decreasing it. So weight bearing.
I like that. I think I like that. It regulates tone.
Yeah. It kind of comes to the middle. So the one thing I about weight bearing to know is that if they are like completely flaccid, like if the question says they have like zero volitional control at all, then weight bearing was probably not the answer. They need to have a little bit of tone. They can be hypotonic, but if it's like totally just flaccid, nothing going on, weight bearing, you could like, if it's an upper extremity, they could like injure their shoulder or something.
Right.
Right.
And the only way you would be able to even get them in a position and maintain it is through some type of supports. So like elbow splints, you know, to maintain the arm in extension. That would be the only way. But yeah, pay attention in the question to if it says mild hypertonicity, moderate, severe, significant, so that you are choosing your techniques appropriately.
Heck yeah. Okay, so we talked about the big idea, right? We're thinking of these muscles as either sort of sleeping on the job, we're waking them up, or they're, you know, awake and we're trying to put them to sleep, get them to chill out. So let's just go through real quick a few specifics. So we said at the beginning how this could apply to like oral motor stuff or postural, like trunk stuff or upper extremity, whatever. So let's just give one or two examples of like what that might look like on a question just so that people can see how this one big idea is really talking about all those things.
Right. I think the first thing that comes to mind, right, when you think about low tone, I think this is important to note. When you see low tone in general, you already know that low tone is going to cause this postural instability or muscle instability. So you know the client is going to have difficulty maintaining upright position. So you need to provide some type of proximal support. That is always our initial action when a client presents with low tone. So the question may say a client presents with low tone, resulting in difficulty with fine motor control, difficulty with oral motor control. It's like, we know this, right? We know that the low tone and that lack of proximal stability is going to cause all of these distal issues of the tongue, the mouth, and the fingers. So look for that and then always make sure your initial action is providing some type of proximal stability, supportive sitting, you know, slightly reclined, lateral supports, chest harness, whatever that may look like. I think that's important to note.
Totally. Yeah. And so similarly, maybe in like a neuro situation, if we're dealing with low tone flaccidity of an upper extremity, if they're giving you, you know, what's your intervention approach? And one of them is about, you know, trying to improve the neuromotor function of the hands. And then another one is about, you know, trying to work on some sort of shoulder movement, something like that. We're going with the most proximal one first, right? Because it doesn't matter if they can use their hands or we get their hands in good shape. If they're more proximally, shoulders aren't doing their job because recovery tends to happen proximal to distal anyway, but we always start proximally, make sure that that's a good foundation. And then we work out distally.
Yeah. So what about, let's see, hypertonia, when it comes to a question, it may say like you have a child who presents with hypertonia or increased muscle tone, or it may say the child appears rigid or stiff. Which technique should you use prior to engaging them in some type of ADL or play activity? I'm going to be looking for those activities that put the muscles to sleep that are very calming to that child. So maybe I will do slow rocking on a platform swing, right? In a linear, predictable fashion. Maybe I'm going to do slow rocking on top of a therapy ball. Maybe I'm going to do some type of deep tissue muscle massage or massage to the muscle. Again, I'm just trying to get the muscles to calm down before or prior to engaging in the activity.
Totally. Yeah. And then, you know, neuro side of things, I've sort of already been giving examples about it, but yeah, if it's, you know, some sort of hypertonic upper extremity. We might be doing some weight bearing. We might be doing some, you know, deep touch, some like slow, predictable movements, trying to stretch that arm out, get it going. That kind of stuff would be all appropriate. So Kim, the one that really just, I think, throws people for a loop because it's an outlier would be like oral motor stuff. So I know we talked about proximal stability before distal mobility, but what are some of these like hands-on interventions that we might do to like a tongue or a, you know, somewhere in the mouth area that would be an example of what this kind of stuff is?
So one, your initial action will always be, right, making sure that there is proximal stability and upright sitting. So if the client is presenting with, let's say, increased tone of the oral structures, then you want to do some stretching. You can use warm temperatures to kind of relax the muscles. And stretching is literally like you taking a gloved finger and maybe stretching the cheeks or stretching whichever area is presenting as tight. And then if the child presents with low tone, where a lot of times they're going to have like this open mouth posture, just a weak chew and poor tongue control, then you want to use very vibrant, what is it, like seasoned things. So you want to make sure the flavor and the taste is intense, right, to try to get the muscles to activate. You can also use cold to try to get the muscles to activate. I don't want to say tap on their face, but I mean, I guess if you're trained, you can tap on the cheek or tap on the tongue. You can put a cold spoon, like a cold spoon on the center of their tongue to try to get those muscles to activate. So yeah, you're looking for some of those similar catchphrases, right? Slow, warm, cold, you know, deep pressure, light touch. You're just looking for those words and different modalities and different types of interventions.
Killer. Okay, so I think, again, just the big idea here, bringing it all back, was that the thing I think the trap people fall into with tone is that they just put all of this into one bucket in their head, right? So they think like, oh yeah, we might use cold or warm or stretching or, you know, just weight bearing, or like they just put it all under like tone things to do. And then when they're faced with a question that specifically says low tone of, you know, this part of the body, what are you going to do? Then all of the answers there look like they could be right, because they haven't differentiated like, well, you do this for low tone to facilitate and you do this for high tone to inhibit. Right.
Right.
So now,
oh, you know what we didn't, sorry, Miles, you know what we didn't mention, which I think is so important, extensor tone, because that's like the most common on the exam. So there's this pattern of hypertonicity called extensor tone, where the client is usually going to be straight as a board. So their hips are trying to extend, their legs are extended out, their arms are extended straight. So whenever you have that situation, you want to promote the client going in the opposite direction of what, where they're presenting. So if your client has extensor tone, you're trying to promote flexion. And again, it always comes back to that proximal stability of the trunk and the pelvis. So you're going to make sure that you're flexing them at the pelvis 90 degrees, more than 90 degrees sometimes, making sure they're in more flexion to try to interrupt the extensor pattern. So I think that's important whenever you see extensor tone noted on the exam.
Totally. And specifically, we aren't talking about like an extension pattern synergy of an upper extremity. We're talking about extensor tone of like the whole body. So like trunk, postural extensor tone means that they're typically in this like kind of lean back posture where they're at risk of like slipping out of their chair on the front end.
Yep.
So that's when we do some of these like, what do you call that? Like hands on the ground, knees on, or like hands and knees sort of
quadruped.
In like a quadruped. That's it. Yeah. Yep. To sort of promote that pelvic flexion and that kind of stuff. Cool.
Yep.
Well, I think we nailed it, Kim. Anything else we should talk about?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can talk for days, but I think that, we have it all. Yeah.
Rad. Okay. So this was, again, one of these big ideas that sort of takes a lot of specific things that you could have spent you know, 30 minutes here, an hour there, studying each individual one, but hopefully with this one big idea, now all of those, at least when you come across them, it's like, oh, this sounds familiar. Like, I know what to do with this. I know how to think about this. So that's sort of the main idea behind what we've been doing with the course. So now this one's sort of crosses over between peds and neuro, but again, 450 formula is, that's the whole idea behind it, is to find these shortcuts to like learning a lot quickly and summarizing it in your head.
Because it's a lot.
It is a lot. Cool. Well, yeah, so check out the, get the study guide if you guys want, otexamprepper.com/study guides. And other than that, we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.
Last but not least, music this episode was provided by Kevin McLeod at incompetech.com. Thanks, Kevin.